think that Google's going to have their own tablet at Google I.O.? There's these rumors that they're like, they're going to issue a Google-branded Android tablet.
I think that would be very cool to see. I'm interested to see their interpretation of a tablet.
Yeah, you know, we saw that Big Lots website where they had an Android tablet from Polaroid, but it looks like Android 4.0, and it says store only. You know, who knows how many they have, though. And it's advertising for $80 or $90, and it's like, I guess there's a lot of entrants now trying to make, you know, an Android tablet, and, you know, the Kindle Fire, I think, was somewhat successful, but I don't think I think it's kind of plateaued.
Well, we finally reached that place where we have Wi-Fi in enough spots where we want to, you know, use the internet or use apps and lounge and relax. From department stores to restaurants, you know, you can use your tablet pretty much anywhere these days, and they have them equipped now with extra options that you can. So why not have this digital world and be able to connect to it? And I like that they have them for $250, you know, or for this one, $89, you know. I like to see the price dropping. Give it a little competition.
Yeah, do you think that there, what do you think of the rumors that there might be an iPad mini sometime, and maybe it would be like a 7 or 8 inch tablet?
I think that's an interesting idea. You know, I mean, I'm sure Apple's smart enough to test that really well.
Yeah, there's a lot of rumors that they have models, you know, prototypes.
But I think, you know, older generation definitely likes the big iPad, so maybe they're going to try to appeal to that Android guy, you know, that wants the functionality and the options, I guess, of a tablet.
The Android guy.
Yeah.
I like that. Who's the Android guy? That's good. That's a good, like, probably marketing demographic. Now, there's going to be many people with Android. It's a really huge platform, right? 900,000 activations a day or something, supposedly, according to them. But what, you know, there's an Android guy that's like the power user. I did see, I think it skews a little toward male, and the iPhone skews a little toward female, although it's very evenly distributed. The percentages are slightly in those directions. And then, did you see when they had that, like, a year ago, they had like a state-by-state map? I think Ohio was an Android state, Illinois was an iPhone state. Like, you know, there's different places where it's more popular, you know.
That's cool. No, I haven't seen either of those, but I just think that Android, you know, brings something good to the market and continue to push, you know, development in this form. And yeah, Apple, explore different sizes, explore what, you know, works for people. I mean, ultimately, you're making products for people.
You're looking at getting a new iPhone very possibly in the next 6 months, and maybe it'll be the new model that comes out, because you have an iPhone 4 right now.
I do.
What are you looking for from the iPhone 4SS or 5 or, you know, 5D or whatever it's going to be?
Speed.
Yeah, it's going to make a big difference when you're using the dual core phone, I think.
Yes.
Because that's the last single core iPhone they made.
Yeah, I'd also like it to not get so hot. And maybe think about playing with the shape a little bit.
Yeah, do you want to, like...
I hold it with a case.
Do you want a bigger screen?
if they could go a little bit bigger, I wouldn't mind taking it. You know, at first, like when I first got my iPhone, I was like, oh my god, I have to like hold it and carry it like a baby, you know. And you're so, and now
yeah.
you're just so used to it, and you're used to its size, and I've just accommodated all my purses and going outness. So if it was just a little bit bigger, I think most things would still fit and work, and I'd be fine with that.
Well, I guess I don't really know what the next iPhone's going to have, but I think most of what you want is in the iPhone 4S already, so I think you'll be pretty set, you know, because it's, I think the iPhone 4S is somewhat faster, and we don't expect the next one to go from maybe an A5 chip to an A5X, as they call the new iPad chip, you know, and they already have the Retina screen on the 4 and the 4S, so they can just put those improvements directly into, you know, speed, hopefully. You know, I'm talking about iPhone, so, you know, there's a rumor now that iOS 6 is going to put podcasts in a separate app. Remember when they moved video out of the music or iPod app? I think they renamed the iPod app, music app on all the platforms. Not sure, but I think, like, but, you know, they moved video out to its own app, and now supposedly they're going to move podcasts out to its own app.
That's pretty cool.
So I guess it's sort of a case of Apple making, you know, putting into effect kind of like they're putting in into iOS their own podcatcher. Now, that functionality is already there, but it's bound up with iTunes, right? Maybe this will be more of an independent podcatcher. But until iOS 6 comes out, we've got podcatchers to talk about. So I actually have been trying some new podcatchers. I traditionally would just connect with iTunes. I would download on my iMac the latest podcast, and then it would sync. And, you know, the system worked, right? So I just kept using it. And early on, I don't know, I think Apple, I'm not sure there were that many podcatchers that got, you know, either that got submitted to the App Store or got approved by the App Store. I'm not sure, but there wasn't a lot out there, I don't think, very early on. But then, you know, now, you know, a few years, you know, into the platform, there's a bit of competition. So I want to talk about the app that I thought was the best, Downcast. And this is an app, it's like a $2 app for iPhone, and you can just... you know, pick, you search the podcast you want. It seems to be able to search the iTunes listings, because it seems to have all, it seemed like all the podcasts that I had gotten through, you know, that I know you could get through iTunes, I was able to get in searching through this, subscribes, and then, you know, it updates, and it downloads the podcast directly to your phone. Now, you know, people on Android, you know, are used to doing this, and now it's getting more common, I think, on iPhone, to just, you know, be able to get your podcast just by, you know, pulling to refresh, you know, on your podcast screen. You can add, and then you can limit how many you keep. So you can keep the 15 newest or something like that. And then that way you can listen to podcasts, and then if too many build up, you can delete them so you don't start taking up enormous amounts of space on your iPhone. Now, if you subscribe to a lot of video podcasts or something, you don't start taking up huge amounts of space. But, you know, audio podcasts, some of them run fairly small. And you can put a lot on. So that's one I've liked using. I've put some of my favorite podcasts on that, and I've been able to listen to them. It's worked pretty well. A few times, it seems to kind of be sluggish about starting to play podcasts, but for the most part, it's worked really well. And you've used it a little bit?
I did. You know, I used the live stream option to listen to our latest podcast. And do you want to let people know where they can hear that?
Because yeah.
It talks about our new album.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you can get the podcast 34 by going to djmcloud.com. Yeah, and then search in the right sidebar for podcast 34. Right now, it's pretty recent, you know, on the front page. And yeah, and that's where you can find the show notes to this podcast too. Yeah, I think that it is cool. If you're in a podcatcher, if you have a pod, like if you go and get Downcast, yeah, just search for DJM Cloud. You can actually find this podcast, and you can also find the video podcast, which, you know, we haven't made too many videos lately, but there's a handful. There's the latest 10 on there. There's some from last year, and then there's also the video that we made that it. it talks about our Neater 2 album. So yeah, I thought you know, we made a video and an audio podcast that talked about our Neater 2 album, and you said you were testing out the album in the car, and it works pretty well. You thought with our Bose speakers in the car. So yeah, I think it is cool. You know, we enjoy making it. If you want to check out the album, you can download it at blogs.sf3am.com/neener. And we put our MP3s up on SoundCloud too, so you can find them at soundcloud.com/djmcloud. You know, I could mention the other podcatchers, but they're not as good. I could mention briefly iCatcher. I thought I gave because I gave Downcast about 9 out of 10. I would say rating is good. iCatcher by comparison, 6.5 out of 10. It's pretty good. It's kind of a number two. It's okay. Now, Instacast I used, I didn't think it was that good. I don't really like the interface and the feel, and just not really a big fan of Instacast, so I gave that 2 out of 10. And then there's another app that I think is worth mentioning, and it's not really a podcatcher. It's an internet radio app, and it has what I would call kind of podcatcher-lite features. So what it does is say it'll scan what podcast you're subscribed to on, you know, your iPhone, say, you know, through iTunes, so in your music app, and it'll find which ones it has in its Stitcher radio, you know, list of podcasts, and then it'll let you listen to those, you know, it'll let you put them in a list, and then that can be one way you can find content. But then it also recommends other stuff, and it has like some radio streams. So that's what I think what it's really about is about finding stuff and about just putting something on and being able to listen to different things, and it'll have suggestions for other stuff. So it's kind of cool for that, but it's basically an online app. You know what I mean? So you have to have connectivity. The benefit of these podcatchers, if you're in Wi-Fi, you can refresh and download the podcasts, and then you can listen to them when you're on the road. This, I think it'll probably work over 3G, but Stitcher is more of just a streaming app. But it'll give you, you know, it'll let you stream. Because like you said, now these categories are definitely merging, because you can stream on Downcast, like you mentioned. So that's an option on Downcast, but probably the typical thing to do in a lot of cases is to just have it downloaded and then listen to it. Whereas in Stitcher, it'll try to remember where you were on the podcast, but it is still just going to that part of the stream, I think, you know. So I don't know. Stitcher is one of those, like, you have to get an account and stuff, but I've been using it a little, and I think, you know, it's kind of cool. But you know, if you want to get your podcasts and listen to them, and you know, be able to just do it all on the iPhone, Downcast is definitely my recommendation on that.
I would agree. It's a nice app. It's good. I think it's got a nice, bright, good, recognizable logo too.
Yeah.
So you can, you know, really identify it quickly, and you know, it gets you to listen to more of your podcasts, and you know, like this one, huh? And it's always fun to kind of make life easier when you want to enjoy information. This app does a good job of that.
Now, there's this article on All Things D. It's in the show notes. It's the article that I got that rumor from about iOS 6 making podcasts its own app. But I just want to read briefly from it. This is by Peter Kafka. This is just the first paragraph, and I thought this might be an interesting basis for some commentary. Quote, "Podcasts were supposed to be a big deal several years ago, but that boom never happened. Now there's at least anecdotal evidence that the format is actually picking up steam as creators, listeners, and advertisers warm to the format," unquote. I think that is an interesting point. Mm-hmm. I think that early on, right, there was a lot of hype, but other than maybe a few celebrities having popular podcasts and then some underground stuff and a dedicated core of geeks, like, so, you know, there was, like, podcasts skewed very much toward, like, computers and geek stuff because it was, like, a kind of a geeky thing to get a podcast. But now I think iTunes makes it pretty easy. There are these podcatcher apps and Stitcher, stuff like that. It makes it easier for casual users to just kind of, you know, get an app, you know, and pretty quickly be listening to stuff that, you know, that might be podcasts. They might just, you know, see it as another internet radio show they can stream, even in some of these apps. But what do you think? I do think there's some evidence that, like, in the comedian community and in the sports community and all these other places that started picking up Twitter a little bit later than the geeks, but relatively early, podcasts are starting to become a pretty big part of the formula.
Yeah, you know, I've been doing a lot of work with content strategy, and really what I think it comes down to is, you know, we have this underlying craving for narrative and story, and podcasts are a great way for so many people to be able to tell their own stories. You know, radio is pretty limited as to, you know, what gets put on there and who gets to hear it, and there's a lot of commercials and advertising. But with podcasting, you know, not to say there's an advertising in podcasting these days, and that's, you know, fine, but a lot of people can just get on there and share what they want to say. You know, and it's a lighter format, you know, than a video, and people can enjoy it in different places and on probably a little bit more devices. So it's cool. I mean, I'm glad it stuck out. I'm glad. I remember it in its early nerdy days, but I'm glad it stuck it out and it's becoming one of the cool kids.
That's cool. How is, like, the big, like, the content, like, the you're familiar with, like, a lot of different, like, sides to content and a lot of different scales, and, like, there's a lot of small web creators, and they're able to scale up with a podcast. How does a big company scale down to the format, if that's maybe not too stupid of a question?
Well, I think first you have to figure out what does your... Do you have an audience there? You know, don't go just doing a podcast because it's the next big thing. I think that's, you know, always rule number one in any business.
It'll seem forced or whatever.
Yeah.
Other bad things that could go with it.
You know, there's probably already some innovators in there. So check out the space. You know, if I might make a little side note, you know, I'm noticing the what I like to call sort of the creeping in of companies into social media and
infiltrating.
And I think I was saying, you know, kind of, they feel like this awkward kid at the table saying, "Hey guys, I want to hang out with you too," you know, but we're like, you're not our friend on Facebook, you're a company. So why don't companies just own that and say, "Hey, we know we're a company. We're not trying to, you know, be your friend. But we do want to engage with you and bring you to us so that we can hear your ideas and listen to you and create products for you." And one way that you do that is through storytelling and through narrative.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, companies have stories they want to tell. So, I mean, it is a chance, like, you know, you have to kind of go beyond, like, the talking points and the PR speak to, like, real narratives. Is it, and people like that?
Yeah, so, you know, if you find, you know, what your audience is up to, and, you know, if they're going to be on podcasts, and, you know, you just look at their technographic behavior. You don't, you know, necessarily find some research on podcasts specifically, but if you have an audience group, survey them, see if they even know what a podcast is, you know, get a baseline understanding, and then you can start to think about the radio format, you know, the storytelling format. What are kind of things that people want to hear about your brand, about your story that fit with this format, you know? So certain things are better for video, certain things are better written. What's good about this format? And I think, you know, we'll begin to explore this. And it'd be really interesting to see some of the leaders come out from a content marketing perspective on podcasts.
Well, I'm going to put us live on parakeetstv.com right now. Is that okay? Just the audio side of it?
Sure.
All right. So first, I have to put it on to Ustream, start broadcast. And now I have a tweet ready to go, and I'm going, all right, well, So, I think there's one more app that I wanted to mention. There was, you know, in the video category, there's this video app, Squirrel, S-Q-U-R-L. I think it was free. It's for, like, discovering video. I really think that's an underserved thing on iOS, right? And I like my, like, iPhone 4S. I can watch video on it, and let alone people with iPads. But, like, you know, there need to be some good video discovering mechanisms other than just going on YouTube and searching or looking at your subscriptions on YouTube, which I guess you can do in the app. But, you know, I mean, what are you going to... I mean, video discovery is still a thing, right? Curation of that. Like, what's a really good place for that?
What do you think's going on in video right now on the internet? I kind of feel like, I don't know, it's a splintered feel to me.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I'm curious about your thoughts.
Yeah, I think that there are some kind of consolidating meta trends that maybe had been building, but, like, I think YouTube is definitely the proverbial, elephant in the room. They tend to have the biggest distribution. Now, I think Vimeo and Dailymotion have hung around and done some things. I think you gotta recognize that they're really playing ball, including, for example, Vimeo being supported in OS X Mountain Lion, which is going to come out pretty soon. It's going to be easy to share videos with Vimeo. Now, remember, I guess these days Apple and Google, you know, they have a lot of intense competition, so they're not really collaborating, you know, too much. So the natural, like, share to YouTube, that might be an iPhoto, I'm not sure, but they're going to add share to Vimeo. It's going to be a big thing. And now it isn't as big of a thing on the Mac, but if they add an easy Vimeo sharing thing on iOS, then obviously, you know, there's a lot of video, even good quality video, being taken on iOS. I mean, with video, I think, let me try to, give a little bit of, like, depth to, like, me just saying that there's these meta trends. I mean, what I mean by that is that you're going to have continuing series of videos from creators. These are mostly small indie creators. There's, like, the generation of stuff that was popular on early YouTube. Sassy Bob and the guy who dressed up like Darth Vader in the grocery store, and, like, all the widely shared, you know, videos with, like, the Grape Lady and stuff like that. Like, for early on, YouTube was about sharing ridiculous clips. There was a lot of mainstream shows that were, like, broken up in bits and shared on YouTube, but then creators started making stuff, and it there was a novelty to the medium, but then there were also these, like, you know, there was a lot of bad stuff and a lot of attempts at comedy, but the stuff was all over the map. It was kind of interesting, a lot of it bad. But there was also a big audience for most stuff. So stuff that would hit a few the right notes could get shared widely. And any kind of stuff would have a dozen or a few dozen views. Now, it's consolidated. There's so much content. They talk about how many hours of content are uploaded every second, stuff like that. Like, there's enormous amounts of content. So people, to stand out, well, they post frequently. And they get into the mechanic of YouTube, which doesn't output RSS feeds. It's about subscribing. It's about subscribing in YouTube so that you come up on people's front page and you have a high subscriber number. So people will, there will be people that have their kind of rut of comedy that they do or their whatever their beat is, but then they'll also acknowledge a lot of memes. I think that's basically the mix right now. So you have, you will have, like, stuff like the quote-unquote cinnamon challenge. There were all sorts of people that would eat, like, a spoonful of cinnamon on video. And so it's one of those things that, like, you're seeing also, you know, you're seeing a consolidation of popularity around young women. I think this isn't surprising as the market's voting, but you're talking about women 20 to 40 are basically own YouTube views in a lot of sectors. and you know, it makes sense. But I mean, let's see. There are a few people that are kind of, you know, noted. But then there's a lot of people that are like semi-obscure. And what's happened is originally, remember there was a partner program. They took some of the people that were like, had a lot of views and stuff, popular channels, and they made them partners. And I don't know what that was about. Maybe pay them a little or something like that, give them a share of ads. But now anyone can basically sign up to put ads in front of their videos. So the annoying thing is that any 2-bit video creator is basically trying to collect pennies on pre-rolls. It's really dumb. You know, I never did that, but I mean, now, like, I have a lot of views, but I think, like, to me, YouTube was always, like, just a nice outlet because people could download videos from my website and through my podcast, but I saw YouTube as a good place to archive it and make it available, but, you know, now, like, YouTube traffic is very shaped toward stuff. To be fair, people have already seen stuff and they're coming back to see more from the same creators. And then also the shaping of traffic, if you're not logged in, if you're looking at the stuff they push a lot of mainstream content. So the point is the other side of YouTube is that I wonder how much of it is mega mainstream content. Like you see all those artists with those Vevo pages or whatever and all that. So all those kind of quasi joint ventures with big mainstream artists, you know, and stuff like that. Like, I wonder how much of YouTube's actual views now are very mega mainstream stuff, like movies that are licensed, you know, for a period to show, and of course, like music videos by really popular artists. So, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I have all these subscriptions here. I mean, and I'm looking, well, let's see, let's look at the front page I have of YouTube. I mean, I don't know. I don't usually find too much that, like, I've subscribed to a lot of stuff. You know, like here, Right Wing Watch has a good channel.
But today, because of our textbooks, because of the media, because of the liberal politicians, we're losing our pride. We're losing our identity. We're losing an awareness of who we are as Americans. And as a result of that, you've got people out here marching on, you know, cities around America. They call themselves the Occupy Movement. And when you try to talk to them and find out what they're protesting, most of them don't even know.
You know what? I think they're protesting douchebags like Jerry Boykin. That's that guy who was that idiot general, gave those stupid fundamentalist speeches. So anyway, Right Wing Watch tracks them. I mean, you know, stuff like that. You know, I guess my favorite, to be fair, like I see all these different videos. The best, the stuff I like the best is probably the people that find crazy clips like everythingisterrible.com. They edit a lot of stuff themselves from VHS, so I gotta give those guys a lot of props. They have other people in the same genre, like Found Footage Festival or whatever that site's called, and other people. But those sites will usually just put some stuff on YouTube, some stuff on Vimeo, whatever, and they'll mix it up so you go to their site. You know what I mean? Like, I think that there's, like, the stuff on YouTube is skewing, like, kind of young, kind of immature, and, I mean, you know, there's stuff all over the map. Like, here's one. Beep, 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 beep. This is like a woman who does photography videos.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome back to the next episode of Mwack Attack, your place on the internet for all things photographic. My name is Missy, and I am here to help navigate you through those murky waters of professional photography, showing each and every one of you that being a true professional photographer is a heck of a lot easier than most people think. Today's episode is entitled, If You're Good With a Lens, You Drive a Benz.
That's a grown woman, by the way. You know, I'm just saying, that, you know, not old at all, but a grown woman. Sitting in a Mercedes Benz and yelling like that.
It's just amazing what is out there.
Right, and I let me see how many views this has. Like 340 views. Here's what it comes down to. This woman has been on a photography podcast I've listened to. It was called Bagel Tech Photography. I think they're called British Tech Photography now or something. But anyway, you know, like she was a guest on this show. She kind of does her kind of persona, you know. And what I'm saying is she's someone who's not maybe internet famous, but she's not internet obscure either. And she has 340 views. It's a really rough slog to get like over 1,000 views for your video. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's very hard. You can work for an audience. You can make content. That's her episode number 19. I mean, I'm just saying. There's a lot of content out there, and you know, I guess you see stuff like I watch like those Al Jazeera English and Russia Today. These like. You know, these kinds of channels like to just put their content out there so you can find, like, news reports from them, right? I mean, they're all really kind of the same these days. BBC, Russia Today, you know, all, I mean, most of them are more in-depth than the American outlets, the CNNs and MSNBCs and stuff. And then of course, there's going to be these people.
Dr. Paul. I've known you for a lot longer than you've known me, but it was an incredible honor to have your endorsement in my run for Congress. As you have remained committed to your principles, I have remained committed to your cause. I've donated to your campaign, defended you from liberals and neocons, and with a lot of help from other veterans for Ron Paul, organized the Ron Paul as the Choice of the Troops.
I think the guy's name is Paul Festival.
So
I think he escaped from one.
Liberty, as you have inspired me, and it has fundamentally changed my life. Your message set me on a path of philosophical discovery that has allowed me to check out of the collective insanity of statism that is plaguing America.
Now, this guy is talking about Ron Paul, and he's you know, hooting and hollering. That's actually kind of a funny story that, you know, a lot of the Ron Paul people, I'd say there's sort of a meltdown going on. Because Rand Paul, his son, endorsed Mitt Romney. Ron Paul seems to be kind of like calling off the dogs in his campaign. It's a very strange situation, and I think a lot of Ron Paul supporters are starting to understand how they were duped.
Yeah. Politics in America is just all the same these days.
I know there's so many of those crazy people just like
yelling
like that, and you know what is it really, you know, end up to. But you know, another thing that's sort of politics. Have you heard about the New York soft drink issue?
I have.
One of the big issues of the day.
You know, big old government coming in and saying, "No sugar for you."
Yeah, like the size of your pop can't exceed this size, and it's like. You know, what about, I don't know if it's really fair, like, you know, that there's, that people are different sizes, you know, there's different sizes of choice for people, like, you know, for, you know, people, like, can't just choose to get the size they want, you know, whatever, Michael Bloomberg, you know, he's going to do what he wants, you know.
It's just, it's the wrong approach to the problem, and it's not going to solve anything.
Oh, no, it's such a holier-than-thou kind of solution that obviously isn't going to really have an impact, like, there's a line. I mean, encouraging healthy lifestyles, but then enforcing, you know, like taking away choices based on your opinion of what's healthier, you know, like I can't believe that that's something that goes on, like, you know, but yeah. So I saw this headline in some aggregator, and it was why I wear the same thing every day and what I wear.
Oh, that sounds very interesting.
Well, I was fascinated, and here's what it turns out. It's someone named Timoni West, who is a woman in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So I kind of skimmed through it, but I thought it would be a guy. I don't mean to stereotype, right? But I thought it was a geek-like guy who is like, you know... I mean, Steve Jobs is an icon to a lot of geek guys, right? He could, you know, wear the same thing every day, like. But it turns out it's a woman, and it's, I think she kind of has a formula, like she says, like apparently she liked Jeff Goldblum's character in Jurassic Park.
Yeah, I can see that.
So it's like, let's see. a hoodie. She has a hoodie. And then Gap has, she's done these charts. I don't know. A t-shirt. But, I mean, but there's different t-shirts. So it's not really like much of a thing. But what do you think of that as like a thing? You know, people wearing the same like thing.
Well, to me, this looks like she's wearing the same items, like, by a category, not the exact same piece of clothing over and over again.
Yeah.
And I think, like, a lot of people will have a, you know, heels, pants, blazer, you know, printed top. Like, it sort of just sounds like their fashion roles, which are very, in the... Just briefly scanning the posts, this person seems like a minimalist, so they don't want to have to think about skirts and dresses and culottes and shorts. Let me just pick the hoodie, whatever else they picked, and then just buy those. So I don't know if it gets more detailed than that.
It looks like there's a tank top underneath the t-shirts. So that's San Francisco for you right there. Leggings, I guess leggings and a skirt, and then socks and shoes. People tend to wear socks and shoes. I guess it's not the same shoes. Kind of pixely there. Oh, but she writes a headline. The headlines come out in all caps. So when I copied it to the show notes, it's all caps.
Yeah, we're not yelling at you.
That's not very minimalist, though.
Yeah, it is. You don't have to do upper and lower.
But that's not the whole, all the stuff. It's just her titles. So she seems to write with capitalization. I bet it's just a force cap font on the, I don't know what's minimal about that. You know, speaking of design and web design stuff, I open sourced the Green Dragon theme. So anybody that wants to download the theme, you can find a link in the show notes. And you know, the theme I had at djmcloud.com is a child theme of Grand Fork, another theme I did. But now I've moved on to Grand Arch, the another child theme of Grand Fork. So just open source the other, if anybody, you know, wants to use it. I mean, it has, you know, a left column for the content and then two columns for sidebars, you know, widgetized with WordPress, you know. So the three column kind of web 2.0 style. It's fairly minimal, but you could, you know, build it out a lot with your widgets and stuff. And then it has an under content widget area too. So you can try to embed something like discuss or intense debate, because I don't support comments and themes. No one wants to use the WordPress comment system anymore. Right?
That's true.
Now I'm working on using FontFace fonts, which is like a CSS three-way to load fonts on your website onto your, you know, web page and have them understood by browsers. So it's like your own web fonts. So you have a much bigger selection of fonts that you can use, and it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So now that's what I'm experimenting. The djmcloud.com homepage, some of the fonts that one of the fonts that's loading there is a FontFace font. So I downloaded it and I put it up. So I think, you know, I think that's something that's a really cool trend, and I really think that people need to start using those, because you can really you can make your site really unique. For so long, we had that short list of fonts that are supported on a lot of computers, and people, you know, I really constrained what people could do. And then stuff like Google Web Fonts, and then a pay competitor to that, Typekit, you know, I think really started to change things. And now using FontFace hosting on your own website, I think really, I mean, that really brings it full circle. And I think it's definitely, yeah, I'm definitely into trying that. You know, Aviary has an iOS app.
Yes, I just got an email about that. I'm excited for them. But I have to be honest, I haven't used that product in a while. So maybe their app will refresh my use in it.
Aviary used to be kind of like a product where people would go to aviary.com and edit photos. Now, it's integrating into a lot of stuff. You know, Flickr took Picnic out because Google's basically shutting down Picnic. They're claiming they're going to add it to Google Plus Photo features, but they haven't added much back. Now, the thing is, Aviary, I think on a previous podcast, we talked about how they now have an HTML5 web editor, but now what they're doing is they're moving into iOS apps. They have an iOS app and an Android app, and they're also, it's also possible now to, like you know, use them inside applications. Flickr, but I think maybe they're going to become embedded in other applications, too. So the Aviary app has a basic, like, photo editor capability with a few filters. You can crop and stuff, and it's kind of similar to Snapseed or the iOS iPhoto, but Aviary is free. It has a few in-app purchases you can make for more filters, but it has some filters that come with it, and it's, you know, it's got some solid functionality. Like, I was using it to crop photos and do some stuff, so, you know, I thought Aviary was pretty cool, and I think, like, maybe they're kind of coming back now, especially because Picnic isn't around, I guess they're backed partly by Jeff Bezos, so, they, you know, they, I think they might, you know, they might have some staying power, and, you know, we'll have to see.
I'm playing with that right now. I'm making a picture.
Well, here's a headline in dinosaur news.
All right, let's hear it.
Dinosaurs skinnier than previously thought.
That's interesting.
News.discovery.com says, quote, a new study describes a new technique used to measure the weight and size of dinosaurs and other prehistoric animals. It could forever change museum exhibits, book illustrations, and other recreations of these now extinct species. The study appears in the latest issue of Biology Letters. Quote, inside quote, this is a huge help for any sort of reconstruction, quote, out. Lead author William Sellers told Discovery News, quote, inside quote, we now have a number that suggests how much flesh to add to the bones, and that should help people produce animals that are the right balance of too fat or too thin, end quote. End quote. So, I don't know. They're saying, for example, that the Brachiosaur was thought to have weighed 176,000 pounds. Now they think it weighs 50,000 pounds.
Wow, that's quite a difference.
And that's skinny, only 50,000 pounds.
That is skinny.
Dinosaur terms.
Okay, I just made you a picture.
Very nice. You used some of those features I didn't even know were in there. I like it. I'm going to export it.
I used the sticker feature to make the limes that you took photos of a little more festive.
Yeah, it has those features, right? It has, like brightness and contrast, but it also has, like, ridiculous stuff you can layer on top. I have been listening to a few variable bitrate MP3s lately. I can tell you, there's something that kind of sounds flat about them. How do you feel about variable bitrate compared to constant bitrate?
I don't know the difference.
Yeah, I probably am far from having really good in-depth knowledge, so maybe we should just move on. Next topic. There's this article in Mashable called Why the Freemium Model Doesn't Work, and kind of, it's short, and it says most stuff, freemium won't work, but the real guts of the article are three types of freemium model that this article claims do work. Now, one of them they call the Evernote-like paywall, Another one they call the Dropbox Lite Network and its viral lift, whatever that's supposed to mean. And then the other one says Spotify-like ads. So I guess they, you know, Spotify, though, you can have the free version, but it has a lot of ads. You can pay to make that go away. Evernote, like paywall, I mean, Evernote has a pretty good free service you can do a lot with, but if you're saving a ton of data, if you're capturing a lot, then you can get it, you can pay for more if you want to, I guess, you know, give the service some money. And then Dropbox, it makes sense that, like, a lot of iOS apps will say, do you want to save this on Dropbox? Pretty soon you're filling up your 2 gig limit or something.
Yeah, and I think people like Dropbox because, you know, that's one of those services where you, if you want to share and exchange with friends, you all want them to be on the same platform. The more friends you have on the same platform, the easier it is for you to share things.
Right, you can send links to files, but having like a good shared folder functionality or something, people both have to have accounts, and then they encourage people with like referral, like giving more storage to people that do referrals for accounts and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, I mean that's, you know, G Drive now is out. I haven't tried it, but Google has a competitor to that, but they don't have an iOS app yet. They have an Android app. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. It's something, though, that, like, that's out there now. Apple introduced iCloud, and then Dropbox got really big, so Google finally had to release a cloud storage service where I think you can, like, it gives you 5 gigs for free, and you can pay for up to, like, a terabyte, but, you know, the cost would get pretty high saving that much. But, I mean, think about it, right? Being able to save a terabyte in the cloud, like, that's something that there have been specialized services that have done that, but that should, you know, the fact that Google just offers that is, you know, like a pay service now with, you know, I guess, premium, you know, model. Like, I think that like, I really, stuff is shifting to the cloud very fast.
It is. It'll be very interesting to see how that space takes off too.
We're listening to Bass Nectar and Nero. What is your opinion about them? In dubstep news,
you know, I am not a huge fan of the genre, but I like these.
Well, now I was telling you I like Nero. I'm not a huge fan of Bass Nectar. I guess I like the kind of song structure of Nero and the kind of like the feel of the songs, and I don't know. What do you think about either of them? They're kind of put them on the same kind of level. Yeah, you know. I was listening a lot to that Jack White record. Have you heard any of that?
I got the free streaming for a little bit, but it was at work, so I had to turn it off after a while because I was off to do something. So I haven't heard it yet all the way through. Do you like it?
I think it's pretty good. I was listening. I never really got into the White Stripes. I think looking back, like, they probably had a few good songs. I didn't really pay much attention, but then he had that project, The Dead Weather. That was interesting. Like, I've been listening to that on Spotify a little bit. So I was like, oh, well, I'll check out his new album. And I really like some of the songs, like some great song craft. And it is amazing to hear someone that does a good job making what I have to call now, I think, traditionalist rock. And it's kind of crazy that it's gotten to that point. England is very forward-looking. England is a very forward-looking place. So they used to call stuff like Oasis trad rock in the 90s. Maybe there's a more specific meaning to some people, but you know what I mean? Like, oh, they're just playing, you know, guitar and bass and drums and, you know, like a singer, like a, you know, it's and but now I think we've reached that point in the U.S. and it's really hard to just be out there having, like, you know, drums and like pretty pretty low tech sounding guitar. And I don't mean that in a bad way at all, but, and I'm sure it's very possible he uses very high tech techniques to achieve the sound, but you know, it's like it's a kind of old rock kind of feel of something definitely has the kind of feel I'm sure Baby's trying to evoke of, like, you know, early 70s Rolling Stones, old Led Zeppelin, you know, riffs and, you know, kind of like like heavy, but not too many guitars. Just like a kind of like a, you know, it's a very traditional sound, you know. But he does a good job, and the songs are a lot of them are pretty likable. And then the ones that are annoying, there's a couple that are sort of annoying, but they're pretty catchy. So you know, it's pretty effective album.
Sounds good. I'll have to definitely listen to it.
Blunderbuss, I think, is what it's called, or something. I don't think I mentioned that. I have this program I've been trying called. Well, it's called Scrivener. Have you heard of this this program? This is a program that tries to like take all sorts of different data and organize it into a novel or a screenplay. Like it has these different project modes, and it tries to organize all your different, like all the different parts. It kind of tries to be kind of put together a creative work.
That's really interesting. No, I've never heard of it. I don't like the name, but I guess they're running out of names these days.
You've been listening to the DJMCloud.com podcast with me, Daniel J. McKeown. This is episode number 35. Thanks for coming aboard, Jessica.
Thanks for having me.
We recorded on June 15th, 2012. You can find more information. You can subscribe. You can find the show notes at DJMCloud.com.